Small businesses are the cornerstones of our local communities, and small business owners are hardworking and passionate people who are chasing down their ambitions while there's a lot on the line. So, let Verizon champion your small business dreams. Whether you own a small business, are scaling one, or starting one from scratch, you need Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon business experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon business expert. Plus, Verizon business experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon, well, they've got you back. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Welcome to Star Talk, your place in the universe where science and pop culture collide. Star Talk begins right now. I'm your host, Neil deGrasse Tyson, your personal astrophysicist, and this is Star Talk. This is a Cosmic Queries edition of Star Talk.
Yes, it is.
And in this Cosmic Queries, we're going to be talking about the science of war.
Yeah, man.
Ooh, science of humans at war.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, man, people are obsessed with this subject.
I don't understand how. I don't get it.
I have never received the breadth of queries.
Because you solicited questions on this topic already.
Yes, we have solicited questions from all over the internet.
I was told this morning that this would be the topic, but you've been scheming all week on this.
All week long, we've been receiving questions, and I have to tell you that people are very passionate about it, and they're doing a lot of deep thinking, you know?
Okay.
Some of the questions, I'm like, you were clearly high when you wrote that question.
That's right.
You had to be high to write that question. You don't get to see the questions.
Plus, that's true. But though I be a scientist, I have no particular expertise in this topic.
Right.
Okay, so I figured, then they plunked a book down in front of me called Grunt, The Curious Science of Humans at War. Mm. So I said, damn, I got to read this book like in the next hour. But then they told me, no, Mary Roach, the author of the book, is here with us.
Yes.
From Oakland, California. Mary Roach, yes. Thank you, Mary. This is not your first time on Star Talk.
No.
It's like your fourth time or something.
I think the fourth.
Yeah, you got like the coolest Star Talkian books we could ever find. So great to have you on here. So basically, these questions are going to be for Mary.
Yeah,
I'll be Mary's sidecar on this.
Right.
I could back her up with some physics if we need it.
Right.
But this is her book.
Yeah, for the most part, this is what people.
And Mary,
know.
I'm not going to lie to you and say, I read this book and I haven't read it yet. I just saw it like this minute.
No problem.
Every other talk show host is lying to you when they said they read your book.
Oh, I know.
You know this.
I know. Okay. I haven't read it either.
Okay.
I don't remember what's in it. I wrote it a long time ago.
Right.
We'll see what these.
We'll see what the people say. And listen, like I said, some of the questions are out there.
But just before you go in,
go ahead.
Just an overview.
Yeah.
What is this subject?
Okay, so this is military science, but specifically not the weapons and the bombs and the strategy, which you may have a lot of questions there about that. When I will turn those all over to you.
Okay.
So this is the human.
Right. The human condition.
It's like extreme heat and loud noise and fear and panic and flies and diarrhea and all of the things that people don't necessarily think about, but the military thinks about because it knocks soldiers out of commission. And anyway, so that kind of
so it's all in here. So this is like your this was your next project after all these other completely far flung places you have been in your book portfolio.
Yeah, you'd think I would take a body of knowledge that I've worked on and build upon that so that
I
start all over again.
Start all over,
knowing nothing.
All right, so let's try this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wait. Still before.
Okay.
What is the most weirdest scientific thing you can share with us about military grunts?
The book starts out with the chicken gun, and I love the chicken.
The chicken gun.
Because I like to say the word chicken whenever possible.
Right.
Chicken gun.
I think I know the chicken gun story.
Chicken
do
gun.
You?
Yeah.
I have never. I don't
have
think I'm familiar with the chicken gun.
Yeah, it's you're testing the canopy of airplanes of fighter pilots.
Okay.
Right.
So, okay.
The chicken is a stand-in for your turkey vulture, your Canada goose, your starling, whatever it is. It's kind of a worst-case scenario because the chicken, it's kind of an odd choice because chicken doesn't actually fly.
Don't fly.
You're not going to, no matter how long you're a pilot, you are never going to actually hit a chicken.
It's a bird, and it's readily variable at your grocer's.
It's consistent.
Right.
Yeah. So you take a frozen chicken, you thaw it out, you load the chicken gun, and you fire it at the canopy.
Right.
Yeah. So
at the same speed that the plane would otherwise encounter it flying through the air.
Right. But there were a lot of thought went into this the chicken, this will be, it's very dense. It's a big, heavy thing. That'll be great. But in fact, there's something called, pause for drama, the feathered bullet phenomenon,
which is the feathered bullet phenomenon.
Tiny little bird, starling, hits the windshield, just like a bullet. Right into the pilot. So
gotcha.
Yeah. So you think you have it figured out? Yeah. We'll use a chicken, and then
all of a sudden a tiny bird comes through and shoots you in the head.
Gotcha. Because the bird pierces a tinier hole in.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of impact,
exactly.
Basically,
it's more focused. It's closer to a bullet.
Okay. So to test this, they should just shoot bullets at.
they could do that. Chickens.
You sit here and let's see if the bullet hits you.
Yeah.
The canopy.
Ready?
Right.
Go.
Or find a finch that's packing.
have a bird fire a gun.
Right, exactly.
Now, just 4 days ago, I was at Edwards Air Force Base, and I saw the canopy of the F-22 fighter, and it was large and beautiful. It was completely transparent.
Mm-hmm.
And what the pilots were telling me is that now it's not just a canopy to their side and to their front. It is completely around them. And so they have full, high-quality visual confirmation of anything that's around them.
Right.
And I said, shouldn't you be flying with instruments rather than relying on your own damn eyes?
Yeah, that's normally the pilot's way.
Oh, okay.
Rely on instruments.
If you're a fighter pilot, that's what I thought. But anyhow, let's get to... interesting example.
The chicken gun. The problem I found out is that when birds and planes take off into the wind, so the birds are like, heading along. They're not looking behind, so they don't have a visual awareness to get out of the way. So that's a problem.
They're not looking at what's coming at them.
Right.
Yeah, the
right.
plane's coming up from behind.
But for me, that's one of the most beautiful metaphors.
Do tell.
It's in life.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go.
When the wind is against you.
Right.
Remember, that is exactly the condition
to take
planes
flight.
Take flight.
Wow. And that is a beautiful metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mine is when the wind
Canada
is...
Canada geese.
I'm sticking with the airplane here.
Right, exactly.
Why do you ruin my metaphor?
I said chicken, and I chose the more lovely Canada goose.
Yeah, so the plane wants the highest speed it can be relative to the air. It's not about the ground.
Right.
It's about the air. So you take off into the moving air, then you can take off at a lower ground speed because your airspeed's higher. That's all.
Gotcha.
The birds figured that out, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very intelligent.
So let's do this. Chuck, you solicited questions on this topic.
And we have them. And our first question is a Patreon patron's question, which, of course, if you actually support us on Patreon, then we will put your question to the top of the queue.
And is that right?
Precedent. Yes, as a matter of fact.
You're actually buying their way to the top of the thing?
I can think of no better way to get people to participate.
Okay.
Or to get votes.
Okay. Buy the votes. Okay. What's your first question?
So, this is from Jeff Prime, who is a Patreon patron. And Jeff wants to know this from Omaha, Nebraska. My unit and I were deployed in Iraq from 2007 to 2008. I personally have known several men from my unit that suffer from PTSD, while other members do not. With all other variables being equal, is there a biological reason why some soldiers handle war differently in a mental capacity that helps explain why some soldiers suffer PTSD while others do not?
Good one, Mary. What
That's
do you
a very good question.
Good one.
Very
yes,
good question.
And I do not know the answer.
Cool.
Yes.
Okay.
There right. you have it.
There you have it.
Yeah. And moving on.
I
no, I'm joking.
I can reflect on this fact.
There's probably a reason.
Yeah. I would think that if we knew that definitively, then we would be able to delineate why that is and then look for a cure right. to PTSD.
No, what
or keep those people,
or keep those people out of combat.
Right, which is what one of the things in the book was they were looking at heat injuries, and there's a huge individual variation in who can acclimate to extreme heat, mm-hmm. like who can feel like start sweating heavy and sooner, and mm-hmm. there's like I can deal with this, and other people can't, and they get right. heat stroke, and they sometimes die.
I'm pretty good in a wide range of temperatures.
Yeah.
And what I found is, could you put on the heat? Oh, can you put on the heat? And I'm just kind of chilling with the cool.
Right.
No, I'm just...
You're self-regulating.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. It's not that I don't feel hot or feel cold. It's that I'm okay with it.
No, you have a...
that's probably psychological. You just roll with everything.
Maybe it is psychological rather than physiological. In either case, you still want to know who's susceptible to PTSD and who isn't.
Right.
Right. Right. And of course, there's that very famous... scene, I only know it from the film, I assume it was true, with Patton walks into an infirmary.
Yes.
And there's these wounded soldiers there, bandaged, and there's one soldier who has no wounds at all. He's there in tears at the edge of the bed.
He has what they called back then shell shock.
Yeah, it was shell shock.
And then combat fatigue.
And then it was combat fatigue.
And now it's PTSD.
PTSD. Not when it wasn't enough syllables. You got to keep it. It becomes more real when you have more syllables.
Give
people
us an
acronym. Finally
Give
pay
us
attention
an acronym.
To it.
Yeah.
so he slapped. He bitch slapped.
Yeah, he did.
The soldier, and this made it to the press that he had no sort of compassion.
No compassion.
Empathy
for this
empathy
young man.
For the and he was saying
he didn't bother him apparently, so he figured everybody else should.
I guess it was a day when psychological injury was not viewed as the same as physical injury, whereas today so often. This is how we do it. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Well, what else you got?
That's a great question.
Mm-hmm. It remains a great question without an answer available from this table.
Well, okay. You know, I don't have an answer.
There's nothing wrong with that. Okay. Now, this one is really for Neil, Mary. And I'm reading it, Neil, because I'm not sure what this guy's talking about.
Okay.
Okay. And this is from Nick. Whew. Sazfransky. Do you think that's right? Sazfransky.
Look, if you start pronouncing names correctly, then we won't know what to do with you. Pronounce it however you want, and that's your thing now.
That's my thing.
Could be Zafransky. I don't know.
Zafransky, right?
Zafransky.
Okay, here we go.
I don't know.
This is what he says. I'm a young sci-fi writer and fantasy. I'm currently working on a hard science fiction book. My question is, how much do we understand, here's the thing, Neil, exotic particles? What, if any, effect they do have on the human body? And then he says, if you could put a blurb about my book, I'd really appreciate it. I don't think I'm going to do the blurb about the book, but...
Well, I think I have a way to link this back to Mary, but we have the portfolio of particles that exist that have been measured. They have names, they have masses, they have, you know, energies in different states and this sort of thing and half-lives. And so some particles just go straight through you, like neutrinos.
Right.
Billions go through you. Every square centimeter every second from the sun, and they do nothing to us. They don't interact. What matters is if they interact with you. That's the difference. Okay? And if they interact, they could do damage. And so this is so if you want to weaponize a particle, you would make some kind of device that you know contains particles that will interact with your body in some way, mess with your DNA, mess with your skin, mess with whatever, and then that becomes a weaponized ray gun, basically.
So you make the particles a delivery system for some type of debilitation.
Correct. Now, we do this for electromagnetic energy. So there's a movable microwave device, which is it's a non-lethal anti-personnel weapon.
Right.
It's non-lethal. So if there's a crowd of people, you drive up this truck, you aim this antenna at the people, and it's like you just put them all in a microwave oven.
Now, do you first get them to hold a burrito?
So they can eat it on the way. So,
and you got to take the wrapper off.
Exactly. So what happens is their skin starts feeling hot, and they want to go out of the beam.
So they scatter.
They scatter. So right. This is how you can decentralize what might be a mob that's coming. Is there any discussion in the military about weapons, the effect of weapons on people that are not just guns, your traditional?
Well, there was, not in this book, but one of my previous books, there was infrasound. I don't know which book this was even about. There was this.
She's got so many books. You don't remember which book that was in that she wrote.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's badass, actually. Yeah,
that's pretty badass. In some book that I wrote somewhere. I believe I said.
So what you all do is like buy them all,
lay them out. She's the point to it.
And you let me know.
That's it. You buy them all.
Exactly. Right. So yeah, but infrasound. There was this talk about that the military was looking for. Non-lethal weapon, I think it was. Supposedly, it would. It was infrasound, and it was like long, slow,
waves. Low frequency waves.
Frequency, and that it would have the same resonant frequency as some of the internal organs. So it would create fear, nausea, terror.
This is like in Jurassic Park.
Never went anywhere.
When T-Rex.
Yeah.
Like the liquid right, in the, a
yeah. right, and you yeah. see the vibration in right. the liquid in the glass,
right,
that type of deal.
Yeah, like yeah. they were sort of like it would launch a ball of infrasound. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I could never find it.
It'd be a knob. There'd be T-Rex. Would be one of the settings.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. By the way, the military doesn't have to look for that. We already have it. It's called One Direction.
Yeah.
They're a boy band.
Okay. Well, there was some concern about NASA had concerns about because the engines were putting in a launch. They would be putting out tremendous amounts of infrasound, and they were afraid they were going to deliver jelly to the moon. That it would even it was so, that intense. But I think, as it turned out, it wasn't.
But in fact, they do have what they call a sound abatement system, and before every launch, in the seconds before they ignite the engine, you see this basically a swimming pool's worth of water dumped onto the launch pad. And the water absorbs the acoustic reverberations. That's right. They're worried that the acoustic reverberations would just completely tear apart the entire bottom half of the rocket.
Right, like the singer with the glass breaking shattered.
Yeah, exactly, yes. Yeah. Except now, so what they do is they put in the water. That absorbs the energy, right. And that way the energy doesn't hit the rocket again. So next time, watch very closely every single launch. And there are big tanks surrounding launch pads. They're water tanks. Bada bing! And then the vibrations hit, it vaporizes the water. So some of the smoke you see coming out is steam, basically.
That's cool.
Vaporized by the energy, the acoustic energy of vibration.
That's amazing.
Give me one more question.
By the way, that is the exact sound that it makes when the water is dumped. Bada bing.
Bada bing.
Awesome. It's awesome.
Three words.
Give it to us, Chuck.
Okay, here's a quick one since don't have a lot of time. Tech advancement through wars from Maddie Stark on Facebook says this. How do you feel about the idea that war is necessary for technological advancement?
Ooh, let me cast that in a grunt question, okay?
Okay.
So how much has war advanced medicine?
A lot in terms of combat trauma. I mean, did stuff like, all right, you get somebody whose artery is cut and they've got about 2 minutes. So, you know, get it in terms of
getting before they're dead.
Before they bleed out and they're dead. And like 2 minutes to stop the bleeding, stabilize them and get them somewhere. They've gotten really good at that. So emergency care, that's been huge.
And of course, the whole concept of triage.
Triage is a war-based thing.
And also things you wouldn't necessarily think about. There was a Navy guy, Captain Phillips, not that other Captain Phillips.
Gotcha.
But who came up with this discovery that if someone's got extreme diarrhea, like cholera, where you're like losing 5 gallons of liquid. Yeah. He invented this thing, the cholera cot. It's a cot with a hole in a bucket. You're going to die quickly because you're just leaking.
Right.
You're leaking.
But so what has he invented? The bucket? That's not an invention.
The cholera cot was one invention, but not the important one. The important one was if you add glucose to the rehydration fluids, it enhances absorption of the fluids and the salt. So now you can drink them rather than hook up an IV. So in a third world country where somebody, they don't have to make their way to a clinic and get hooked up to an IV, they can actually drink this stuff and it's saved, you know, millions of lives. Because it's still like two million people die.
So here's a morbid question. You ready?
I'm ready. I'm always ready.
Have more people Have more lives been saved by the medical advances from war than lives that have been lost from the waging of war itself?
Wow.
Interesting. Well, they, you know, okay, well, here's a figure for you.
This war is good for you people.
I know.
We have to kill you in order to save you.
You're listening to Star Talk. Stay tuned for another segment.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me, too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
Welcome back to Star Talk. Here's more of this week's episode.
I left you with a question just before the end.
Yeah.
I just wanted to know, given how many lives have been saved by medical advances from innovations during war,
right.
Could one make the case, the morbid case, that the number of people who have died at war is less than the number of lives who have been saved by the medical advances derived from it?
Probably just from the dysentery and diarrhea statistics alone. I mean, you're talking, okay, so 2.5 million people a year still, the WHO, that's the figure for deaths.
World Health Organization.
Still, yes, to this day.
Yes.
2.5 million people die from dehydration, from diarrhea.
A lot of them
cholera or some other.
In developing nations. So that's a huge...
2.5 million a year.
2.5 million, yeah. Exactly.
Okay, so 50 million people died in the Second World War. It was the last number I checked. So 25 years of that, that's just the diarrhea alone.
Right.
But they are dying. We didn't stop them from dying. So I want to know if lives have been saved.
No, but she's saying that just the advancements that we've made to combat that may have saved... a significant number of lives. Whether or not it balances, we don't know. But
But my statistic that they're still dying.
They're still dying. So what you're saying, that number could have been much larger.
Much larger.
If that's the number,
that's the number that's still dying. It would have been
huge.
It would have been huge.
Huge.
Right.
Just like my hair. Huge.
Okay.
Huge. Huge.
Yeah. Oh man.
Not like my hands. Yeah.
Okay. But I recently saw a statistic on the number of deaths from car crashes versus every year that there's been a military conflict, the number of deaths just from car crashes dwarfs the number from killed in whatever the war that's going on.
Okay, not the Second World War, but surely since then.
Since then.
Yeah, we lose 100 people a day.
Now, are they only accounting American deaths, or are they counting the number of people? Because we tend to kill a lot more people.
That's true. Right. That's true. But I can tell you, it's 100 people a day on the roads. And at the peak of the Vietnam War, we were losing 100 servicemen a week. So it's basically a factor of 7 higher in cars than in military, right. not the First World War. I mean, not the Second World War. But here's something I tweeted recently: that Second World War, you run the math.
Mm-hmm.
We were losing 1,000 humans per hour.
Wow,
1,000 per hour died at the hands of another human being during the 6 years of the Second World War.
Mm, wow.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's insane.
However, the Mexican-American War, 7-1 ratio, disease to combat injury, dysentery, diarrhea, malaria, 7-1. Of course, it's you think Mexico and diarrhea, they're always going to be linked.
Wow.
I know.
So
poor
true.
Mexico, even back then.
Even back then. Don't drink the water. Back then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there was that quote, William Osler, dysentery has been more fatal to soldiers than powder or shot.
Ooh.
Wow.
That's even as good as your chicken metaphor that you let loose earlier.
It was not. All right, Chuck, what else you got?
Here we go. Let's move on. This seems to be a big theme that people want to know about. And this is from Heron Filth. Okay? That's the name.
That's how you're pronouncing the name, but go on.
No. F-I-L-T-H.
Let me have fun with how you can't pronounce stuff.
Okay.
All right, go on.
Maybe you just wrote it. Remember that way, wrote it that way to make to mess with me.
All right.
Here we go. Hi, Neil. Really love the show. Keep it up. My question is, in recent films such as Civil War, we're talking about Marvel Comics Civil War, mm-hmm. we see genetically advanced soldiers like Bucky, who is a character, Captain America's friend. I'm sorry, I'm translating as he asks the question. And the Winter Soldiers, also part of the genetically modified soldiers. Could super soldiers eventually become a reality? If so, what are the biological implications of doing such a thing? Greetings from Mexico City.
Whoa!
Yes.
This is a show for you.
Yeah. Wait, so Mary,
I'm gonna go to Mexico City. It's supposed to be great.
So Mary, are there studies of, have there been attempts to modify the human physiology in war?
I saw this amazing paper, DARPA. You know, DARPA. Mm-hmm. DARPA is the way outside the box.
Defense Advanced Research Project Agency.
Yes. It was a paper. It was speculation. It was not projects that are underway, but they were listing like.
In fact, one of the whole points of DARPA is to have highly speculative research.
Yeah.
That could break open a whole new field of military might.
That's so cool.
Okay.
This was in particular modifications to the human body. What could we do? And inspiration from the animal kingdom. So they were looking at unihemispheric sleep, which you have in marine mammals and in some geese and ducks.
And right.
Where, what, sleep with one eye open.
One eye open.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they funded some research, so some basic research into marine biologists and bird people. Ornithologists would be the, I guess, the word.
Call them bird people. Yeah.
Okay. look into
bug
this.
People, I call them bug people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, the butt people have probably been doing some work too.
Uh-huh.
But, just looking into, how does this work? And mm-hmm. could we foster this and somehow make our soldiers able to sleep? Yeah, because sleep deprivation is huge and it affects your performance, your military performance. So if there were a way to sleep with one half of the brain and keep the other eye open and make sure nobody's sneaking up.
Then you swap brain halves. Presumably both halves need
like sharks.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. So was that. It was an amazing list. There were things like the human llamas or could you somehow have more hemoglobin for mountain warfare? Could you make somebody able to kind of Sherpa-ize them quickly to be able to breathe, to function better at high altitudes? I do remember surgically installed gills was on the list.
Mm.
Wow. Okay. Now, that
would be like Waterworld right there.
Exactly. Waterworld.
Does Kevin Costner know about this?
That's right.
We're going to work on it. We're going to try him out first.
When he came around his neck and you saw the gills in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
So here's my take on that. Not that anybody asked, but I'll tell you my take. In the early days of space exploration, there was all this talk about modifying the human physiology to accommodate the stress and strain on our body in space.
Mm-hmm.
And in almost every case, they came up with an engineering solution to the problem rather than a biological one, where it therefore was not invasive to the human body. They would talk about, is there some pill you can take where the brain would not require as much oxygen when you do a high G turn out from a, as a fighter pilot might when they're turning around. And that way your brain wouldn't need as much oxygen and still, and then the engineers just developed these suits.
Right, where they just
squeeze your leg, blood ain't got no way to go.
Right.
So many of these are, how about one where you don't feel nauseous and and feel nausea in zero G. Or you can just spin up the space station and create one G. Do you want to make bulletproof skin or just make Kevlar and wear a bulletproof vest? Yeah. Right? Yeah. So
I want the bulletproof skin. Just saying.
You're just saying.
I'm just going to go on record and say the bulletproof skin is what I would go for.
So I'm more Tony Stark on this. Give me the
suit.
Give me the power, the money, and the brains, and we'll make anything we need. Okay. I will be able to fly.
That's cool. Yeah. That's cool.
No. All right. What else you got?
All right. Here we go. Johnny Glasgow from Facebook says, "Hi, Neil."
That would be Facebook. Our followers on Facebook.
Our followers on Facebook.
Facebook headquarters.
Right. Facebook. Right. Okay. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Right. He's not actually having coffee with Zuckerberg right now. He says, "Hi, Neil. Hi, Mary. What scientific advances made during wartime have the biggest positive effect on our civilian lives today?"
I'm going to have to go with the medical stuff.
The medical stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The stuff we were talking about earlier.
That is the most positive effect.
Positive effect. Yeah. Right. I mean, I guess you could talk about, I mean, if you like taking forward the whole notion of drones completely taking humans out of the equation, but that's, you know, it's got other issues, but.
The whole episode on Star Trek.
That was indeed where they fought the war through completely mathematical calculations.
Right.
And then people reported to a chamber for
execution because the calculation showed that you would have been killed.
They
just walked in and they took him out.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that, which is that.
Captain Kirk said, "No, you can't do that way.
Right.
That is not war. War is ugly and bloody."
Spock said, "Actually, though, statistically, I can see the merit to this particular approach."
That's cool. Yeah, that's so definitely the medical advancements.
That's what comes to mind in terms of a positive. Yeah, positive.
Okay, I would say.
Are there any technological advancements?
I would say one thing.
Go ahead.
The V2 rocket was the very first intercontinental ballistic missile, which became the foundation of our entire space arsenal. So everything that we know and love about space, including where you get your weather maps from the Weather Channel, you get people saying, "What do I need space for? I have my GPS and the Weather Channel. That's all I need."
That's like get your government hands off my Medicare.
Exactly.
That's what that statement
is. That's exactly what that is. So I would say,
I know now. NASA. I mean, anything that's miniaturized, fireproof.
Oh yeah, the entire miniaturized,
lightweight.
Well, that was NASA,
that's
not
NASA.
War.
I know.
War didn't have to miniaturize the way NASA did.
No.
You have to launch it for, you know.
Well, then
every ounce cost you money.
Here's a war thing, though. Right.
It's $10,000 a pound to orbit.
Oh, God.
So if you got a little extra gut. I ain't flying that in space. You go get back on a treadmill.
So how about this? I believe the first computers were used to calculate the trajectory of mortar shells.
Is
that correct?
True. That is true.
Okay.
Yes. Yep.
So,
yep.
And now we have computers. Right. I mean, we know what they do now.
Yeah. Yeah. So, in fact, the military led the development of supercomputing.
Yes.
That's right.
Right.
Nowadays, it's commercially driven because the demand is there. But in the day. Yeah.
Back in the day.
Right.
There you go.
All right.
Well, not bad. Not bad at all. Mm-hmm. Okay.
What else you got?
Here we go. This is from Christian Prisblick. Okay, here you go, Mary. Take a look.
Now they're just messing with you, Chuck. They're just messing with you.
I know. Christian, right?
We're the Joe Smiths out there.
Prisblick?
Next time, can a Joe Smith please ask Chuck a question?
I know. Where's Joe Smith when I need him? Okay, Christian Prisblick from Twitter says this. Do vets of armed combat face a disproportionate number of chronic health issues, and does race play a role or as well as class? So class and race, do they play a role in the chronic health issues that vets face, and do vets face more chronic health issues than anyone else by virtue of being a vet?
Yeah. There's a tremendous amount. I mean, just starting with hearing, the number one VA expense, hearing loss.
Really?
Come away with, I mean, it's not just rifle bombs going off and rifle fire. It's steady state noise. Like you're in a Black Hawk helicopter,
right,
which is like 106 decibels, and you're in for the, and so then they have hearing protection.
Chuck's imitating a helicopter.
Is he like that?
Yeah. I like that. Yeah. Can you do an M16?
Well, M16 is a little bit more staccato, so it's...
But M16, the rifle.
Sounds like a duck.
Yeah, I do.
No, but then there's the Huey from Vietnam. No.
Yeah.
It's like it had a pulsing sound. So you're saying being persistently bathed in high decibel sound, even beyond just whether you were near an explosion.
Right. And the other problem is that when things go kinetic, when there's fire, when there's like, there's no warning. You don't have time to go, roll down my foam earplug and pull my outer ear back and put that, there's just not time. And they're not going to wear that stuff all the time because you lose your situational awareness. You can't hear somebody shouting, get down, hurt somebody over there. So they've
tried to do that in some movies.
Well, they have Special Operations says it's really cool. You bionic hearing. It's so cool. It's this headset and it... attenuates the loud noises.
So it changes the
right.
The range.
So the loud stuff gets quieter, and the quiet stuff is amplified. Louder. So right. You're like the bionic. I was. It's like so you could hear across the room. You could hear a conversation.
That was the eye. What you're doing?
Oh, was that the eye? That was the ear.
That was the ear.
Okay, I think you're right. Yeah.
You know, Tammy Summers had the ear. She had the ear.
Now she's selling mattresses. I know. Late night TV.
Can you hear me now?
So that's interesting. So these,
anyway, yeah, but that's the biggest one. But then, you got a traumatic brain injury and orthopedic stuff. I mean, if you're in a vehicle that is designed to withstand an IED going off, I mean, you'll survive, the bottom of it would come up and slam into the foot and the pelvis and the spine.
Speaking of that.
Kinds of just wear and tear on your body, even if you're not blown up.
So speaking of that, and this question is from...
But so these are veterans that have been in combat,
right? Yes.
Not just veterans, generic veteran.
Right.
Because most veterans have not been in combat.
Right.
So...
Oh, so do they have more... Well, I don't know.
Well, I mean, you know...
We presume it's combat veterans.
Well, we would have to assume, because, I mean, I'm going to say carpal tunnel doesn't count.
I've been sitting at this desk filling out these reports for weeks. My wrists are killing me.
Actually, I have this book called Dear America, which is a collection of letters home from Vietnam.
Right.
That was collected before they made a Vietnam memorial here in Lower Manhattan. And so on the memorial are subsets of these letters.
Wow.
The book is all of them.
That's cool.
And just to your point, Mary, these are letters from all manner of servicemen serving in Vietnam. And there's some talking about like their friends getting blown up in front of them and wading through the muck and mire and the mosquitoes.
Right.
And then there's another letter of someone who's in an office in Vietnam saying, I can't, I don't want to laugh, but it's so hot in here. It's almost 94 degrees, and the fan doesn't work. These working conditions are
unbearable.
It's like, do you have any idea what's going on?
Around you?
Around you?
Right. Yeah.
My typewriter keys are sticking. The humidity.
So I think it's your biggest problem is your biggest problem. That's really what that is.
Yeah.
Whatever your biggest problem is, that's your biggest problem.
Wow, that's cool.
Chuck, how many questions can you squeeze into this?
All right, you know what?
Try it. Go.
Here's the deal. We're gonna go philosophical. Les Olenhauser says, do you think there can be or ever has been something that can unite humans so effectively as war? What a profound question.
Mars mission.
Ooh, look at you with the Mars mission. Ooh.
Landing a human Mars mission. Everybody's going to tune into that, right? Don't you think?
Mm.
I don't know.
Well, so let me agree and add to that. So I've thought a lot about things that unite humanity.
Okay.
So one of them is war, which is the largest organized unification of humans that we experience.
Nothing mobilizes us like a good war.
Exactly. And what odd thing is that it mobilizes us against one another, but it's nonetheless mobilizing. Another one is the Olympics.
True.
And another is the World Cup.
Which, by the way, is a metaphor for war.
Yes, it is, actually. And so, too, is the World Cup.
Exactly.
Except you don't end up dead at the end of it.
Right.
So the World Cup, the Olympics, and the International Space Station. Okay. When you look at the cost of the International Space Station and the number of countries involved, it is the greatest collaboration of nations outside of the waging of war.
Really?
You look at just the total investment that has gone in it. Basically $3 billion a year plus. So, yeah, yes. So I agree, landing on Mars could do that if it's done as a global consortium.
Exactly. As it's done,
It would be, wouldn't it? I mean, don't you think?
It can be, but I don't have enough confidence in the human species to think that we wouldn't do it out of competitive urges rather than cooperative urges.
So you're saying that if we make it a reality show competition between countries, we're more apt to go to Mars than if we were just to wait for us to finally come together.
My feeling is that your urge to be innovative is greater stimulated when you're in competition than when you're in cooperation. That's my feeling here.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
As capitalism at its best reveals, where I want your money. I don't want you to give your money to the other person.
So now that competition drives me to be better than the other guy.
There it is.
Gotcha.
There it is. I think we're out of time. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, well, let me just... So Mary, let me break ranks here and pull away from Chuck's questions.
Okay.
Is there one other thing you want us to know about your book before we end Star Talk today?
Oh, gee, it's a dark topic, but it's an... interesting, quirky, fun read. I don't want people to get it. I mean, war is serious, but the people in the military have a good sense of humor, and it's
you have to. I think
to. Anytime there's death involved and life and death and all that, it's fun. It's a fun.
And you interviewed servicemen.
I was on a nuclear sub. I was in Camp Lemony.
They let you in.
It took me a year and a half to get on.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
they did. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Actually,
it was cool. Yeah, it was cool. So I was all over the place, and it's a foreign culture, and like any foreign culture, it's just a really interesting place to go and to learn about. So.
Cool. Mary, thanks again for being on Star Talk.
Thank you.
I want to be on your tour list every single time.
Oh, you bet.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. You'll never get
I want to be like the only show that had every one of their damn books. Right here. We get them
You're
all.
Six for six, so.
Well, we got to close out this part of the show. When Star Talk returns, Chuck Nice and Bill Nye take over the studio for a segment of maker-themed cosmic queries.
Yes.
Brought to you by Google.
Welcome back. Here's more of Star Talk.
This is from at Mrs. Doodle Journey on Instagram.
At Mrs. Doodle Journey.
At Mrs. Doodle Journey.
Okay. Okay.
What is the best way to make a portable greenhouse? So I suppose she's looking at this.
If I were, no. No, this weekend.
Really?
Yes, with clear plastic inflatable dome. That's what I do.
That's it. That's all you really need.
That's what I do. People play tennis under inflatable domes. People make inflatable domes for their backyard for fun.
Right.
Held up by a fan.
Right.
So I could easily imagine a clear plastic dome. You carry it in essentially a backpack or a shopping cart or a hand truck.
Right.
And you show up at wherever you want inflatable dome zone and turn the bad boy on. And the fan to hold the thing inflated would run off a solar panel connected to a battery that would keep the thing inflated all night. I did that without even just from the hip.
I'm going to tell you, that was impressive.
And then in space, it seems like it would be just the same thing with a lower pressure inflatable dome. And plants do seem to grow okay in space. You know, that's a little game they play up there.
Right. So as long as you have the right soil...
Or the right hydroponic medium.
Right.
Can I say medium?
I like that.
Here on the radio, medium.
I like hydroponic even better.
Yes. And then you can grow stuff, I guess, portably.
Awesome.
But still, so far, you still need light, a source of light and water and hydroponic
nutrients.
That's
why they have lamps and closets. I'm sorry. I'm thinking.
Can't hear you.
Totally different.
Don't know what you're talking about. But you know, changing the subject to... what used to be illegal agriculture at home.
Yeah.
Looks like that's all going to be legal soon enough.
Well, it should be. Let's be honest.
Can I ask as a fellow citizen?
Yes.
I don't want to breathe the secondhand smoke from the legalized and properly taxed marijuana sales.
You do not want to breathe the secondhand.
I do not want to breathe the secondhand smoke.
Well, that's why they'll have coffee houses where can go and designated areas for people
good.
Who
and grown
that.
An inflatable greenhouse.
Exactly.
Maybe in an inclement place say you're in Norway or something in the wintertime and you just got to have your inflatable greenhouse for whatever, you could do that.
Your coffee house.
Enjoyment.
Enjoyment, right.
But just don't make me breathe this. I just never like the smell, if I may whine. It's never liked the smell. And you worked in nightclubs for 100 years.
Yes.
Everything smelled like smoke.
Well, that was one of the great things about moving here to New York City was shortly after I moved here.
When was this?
1999, exactly. But shortly thereafter, the mayor said, no more smoking in anywhere. We're going to get rid of smoking. And
interior spaces.
No interior spaces. And everyone lost their mind.
Thought the place was going to go out of business.
It was going to go out of business. Got it. And especially the
restaurants.
The restaurants and, more importantly, the comedy clubs. Because they're like, what are you talking about?
That's
like,
all we do
that's
here.
All we do here is smoke and drink. That's all that happens here.
And so occasional laugh is told.
And right. And we don't even care about that as long as people are smoking and drinking. And
what happened is?
More people came.
And they spent more money.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on to at Jennifer. You know Jennifer.
It's a long last name.
Oh, my. Jennifer.
Melcade.
Melcade. Melcade.
Anyway, Jennifer.
Exactly. Coming to us from Instagram. Now, this is somewhat of an existential question.
Like, dude.
So you're going to have to kind of really just branch yourself for a minute. Hey, Bill, what's next after 3D printing?
I don't know, but I think additive manufacture of all sorts is in the future for sure. You know, you can design shapes you can make additively or 3D printing that you can't make through conventional machining. So what's after that? I guess molecular scale 3D printing.
Ooh.
Or atomic scale.
Look at you. You had it in you.
Yes. Atomic scale 3D printing. Individual atoms placed on, let's say, substrates of exotic new future circuits.
Wow.
Extremely compact. Hustling against Moore's law, you know, where every 10 years we double the amount of memory in a given volume.
Right.
Yes. That's the future, Jennifer. I've answered it succinctly. And you can take that to the bank, Jennifer. No,
it does seem reasonable. All right. So now, okay. So this is these names.
Oh. All right. So go ahead.
All right. So this person, I'm going to call you Yoy. Okay.
Yoy, that's pretty cool, actually.
Yoy. All right. Hey, Bill.
I think you mean Yo.
Or Yo.
Yo.
You could stop right there.
Yeah. Yo, Bill.
Yeah. Yo. And it says, hey, Bill, what are the limits of 3D printing? Don't cop out and say the human mind, Mr. Science Guy. Do we know yet what we cannot do or could never do with 3D printing?
Well, I think of something big. What's a big thing?
Empire State Building.
Empire State. I don't see why you couldn't 3D print it. No, and imagine the printer.
How big does hang?
No, the printer could go around. Well, not just that. The printer could go around the foundation in a big spiral.
Oh, you know,
and it's going up to the sky indefinitely as long as somebody fed it spiral 3D printing fluid.
You know what? Now that you say that, there are these window cleaning Autobots that they use, I forget the building in Australia.
To clean windows.
Yes. But
robotically.
Robotically. And that's how they work. They just go around the building
in a spiral.
All day long,
yeah.
In a
why
spiral,
not?
And
what's not to love? So, I mean, you can, in other words, think of it where the printer doesn't have to be bigger than the object being printed. Let's go with that insight.
Right.
You follow me?
Right. I got you. Gotcha.
Squirting like a spider web is bigger than a spider.
Exactly.
In fact, the Empire State Building is bigger than a human.
Exactly.
By some fraction.
Oh, my God.
And humans showed up there and built the freaking thing.
See, so, hey, yo, here's the problem. You think too small. No, I'm joking.
No, he or she is a listener and viewer. We love you.
No, we do love you.
You're not.
That's a really good point, though. It's a spider web is much bigger than a spider.
Yes.
And it's because you're building out. And so this would be building
around. The spider provides the protein, the raw material, and then also the design and construction. It's very cool.
Think big.
Doesn't have to be a spiral. That was Uncle Bill just kind of jamming.
Mm-hmm. All right, here we go. Swanson Dinner. Swanson Dinner Swanson wants to Dinner. Know this.
Our good friend.
Our good friend Swanson Dinner, Swanee, says 3D printing seems like a great way to pave the road for human colonizations of
pave the road, get it?
Solar system.
Well, that's it. That's what we want to do, is have 3D printers on board spacecraft that would make everything an astronaut needs when he or she needs it, rather than packing all this stuff.
Right.
And I'm sure, I think you'll want a substantial number of rolls of duct tape, but also you'd have a machine that would print all the tools you might need. Should anything go wrong, you make the tool to fix that thing. Otherwise, you don't take the tool. Instead, you take computer programs, computer files, full of what of the files to make the tools.
Thanks for listening to StarTalk Radio. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Many thanks to our comedian, our guest, our experts, and I've been your host, Neil deGrasse Tyson. Until next time, I bid you to keep looking up.